In the last week or so, our memories have been stimulated in some ways because we've had our grandson stay with us. And we thought we'd put all our child rearing behind us. We thought that our days of child rearing were finally over and we could now relax and that's the pass it on to somebody else entirely. It doesn't quite work that way. Because we had Jacob stay with us, and we thought we were staying with us overnight. It gives Amber and Dina a break. It's just a 30, 40 miles away from us, so there's no problem. We're picking him up after services. He stays up with us overnight. We're taking him back on the Sunday. But it is really like a second opportunity to do it right, and I thought it would be worthwhile giving because all of us here. Either grandparents or parents, and it would be worthwhile, therefore, in giving a sermon on parental responsibilities and grandparental responsibilities to a large degree. Because one thing that Amber, I mean, she doesn't attend services or anything like that, and she determined that she wasn't going to spank Jacob in any way, shape, or form. And of course, we respect those wishes, and we don't do the same, but it doesn't mean to say he's not without punishment. But it is a problem trying to get him to listen, to pay attention. And in fact, we came to the end, we've taken him swimming, and we were going to get some chips, and eventually we had to say no chips, which was not really what he wanted in any way, shape, or form. But I think next time we do it, which will be another week or so, he will remember. And we can say now, you remember the chips? Yes, we remember the chips. Well, you remember I said we were going to have chips, you didn't have any chips. Now you listen to what I'm going to say. And hopefully the message then will start to sink in. But part of the reason as well for giving the sermon is that society is crumbling generally. There's many reasons, the lack of community within society. We don't tend to know our neighbors the way we used to. There's a breakdown of marriages. I mean, you can see it even with the way the house pricing is going up. They're needing, I mean, the building industry is absolutely flat out. And part of that is a breakdown of marriages, that instead of having two, so one home for a couple and a family, they're now having two homes in many cases. There's a mobility within society as well. The extended family isn't there. I mean, even in the case of Amber and Dean, they're still about 30, 40 miles away from us. In the case of Estelle and Andrew, they're 130, 40 miles away from us. And that makes it quite difficult. And the moral training of the young is it's very important. It was actually a community issue. It was like something within the community. It was within the extended family. And these things are breaking down within our societies. The other thing that as the society does in fact crumble, they aren't listening to God. In the case of Jacob, it's a case of getting him to listen. And children are not listening to the parents. They're just not. You can see it continually. You can see that. And the church tends to reflect the society that we find ourselves in. So I want to stress the qualities and the responsibilities that we need as parents and grandparents. And in so doing, I want to talk particularly about listening, because there is an awful lot in Scripture about the way God as a parent treats us and the way in which he tells us to listen. And if we don't listen, there are certain repercussions. And those really also mirror themselves within the families. We need children who listen to us. If they don't listen, there are repercussions. And these things we need to keep in mind, particularly in today's society. I've got 6 points altogether that I want to go through. The first is something that we can quite easily forget when we go through the kind of potty training and all the rest of the bits and pieces that we as parents have got to go through. And that is that the purpose of child training is to let them go. Eventually, that child is going to walk out the door and have its own life. Even to a limited extent, when it's growing up as a teenager, it'll walk out the door and have its own life, or when it goes to school. They will have their own life, but ultimately we have got to let them go. And what we need to do is our training, it must be for that end, towards that end. Secondly, that it's not just the children that are growing up. We as parents, and even we as grandparents, are actually growing up. We all should be growing up at the same time. Now, obviously, we should be further ahead than our children are, but nevertheless, we are. We're learning. And parenthood is not just about training children, it's about training parents as well. It's an environment in which we can learn and we can train. Thirdly, that part of that training that we've got is that sacrifice is required to be a parent. And I know that all of you have found that already, and you're going to find that continually. That is true. That's the way it is, and that's the way God is with us. I mean, it's exactly the parallels are certainly there. Fourthly, if we don't train our children, Satan will. Absolutely guaranteed. If we do not do the job, Satan will train our children. And in this particular age, we've got to be aware of that, and it's something that we neglect to our peril. Fifthly, the example that we have is absolutely vital. If the example isn't there, any training that we try and give is totally worthless. It's just not going to be working. And finally, the sixth point is that teaching, with the kind of diligence and discipline, is vital. It's a vital part. So those are the points I want to go through. And as I said, we need to be aware that just as God tells us to listen, it's vital that as we train our children, that they also learn to listen, because it's the crucial part. If we can't get them to listen to us, we can't train. It's impossible. And so there are techniques that God has given us, which we can use to get them to listen, and we need to do that. So this first point, the fact that purpose of child rearing is that is to let them go. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. In verse 8, it says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father." Now again, remember I mentioned listening. That is important. And here it says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father. Listen to what I've got to tell you. Do not forsake the law of your mother, for there shall be an ornament of grace unto your head, and there'll be chains about your neck." In other words, it's not a case of you just listen for that particular time. An ornament around your neck is going to stay there, and it will stay there. Once you finally get away, that training will teach you and continue to teach us. And it's the same with our children. Even though our children are very, very young now, it's when they get older that they will in fact remember the things that are being taught. And that is something that, again, the purpose of child rearing is eventually to let them go. If we go over to Proverbs chapter 4, turn over a page into chapter 4, notice it says, "Hear, you children, the instruction of a father. Attend to no understanding." Again, if they don't hear, if they do not listen, you can't teach. It's absolutely essential that they listen. "For I give you good doctrine, good teaching. Do not forsake my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also, and he said to me, 'Let your heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live.'" So it's not just a case of having them, in other words, having them be obedient. It's a case of keeping the commandments, keeping the teaching. It says, "Let your heart retain my words." In the deepest being, those words and the training are to be remaining. So it's not just a case of getting kids out of our hair that is necessary. Training children is so that that child can take the training that you're giving it, 20 years down the line, and it's of benefit to them. That's what we're looking for. That is the aim. Get wisdom, get understanding. Don't forget it. Don't decline from the words of my mouth. Don't forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all you're getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she shall promote you. She will bring you to honor when you embrace her. She will give you your head as an ornament of grace. A crown of glory she'll deliver to you. Hear, my son, receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I've taught you in the ways of wisdom. I've led you in the right paths. When you go, your steps will not be straightened. They will not be difficult. And when you run, you're not going to stumble. Take fast hold of the instruction. Don't let her go. Keep her, for she is your life. And again, we do. When you've got a hedge, I don't know whether you've ever laid a hedge, but if you've got a hedge and you're actually trying to train a hedge, or if you've got a, supposing you had a fruit tree, you could take these stumps out of the thing there, and you're going to put your fruit tree there, and you want to try and put it, and you're going to train this fruit tree. If you let the thing get 20 foot tall, and then you try and train it, it'll break. You can't do it. But as it's growing, if you just bend it and just peg it, it will stay in that place, so that 20 years time you will have it trained all the way down the hedge, and that's the way you train fruit trees. That's the way you train when you're laying a hedge. If you've got a huge hedge which has grown up and you try and chop one side and lay it over, the chances are it'll break. But if you do it when they're very young and the twig goes over, it will actually stay, it will go in that direction. So we're looking for the direction. We're looking for, how do you feel this child that's 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 or whatever, what's going to help this child in later life? Not what is going to get it, that child, out of my hair for the next 5 minutes. That's the toss-up. But as parents and as grandparents, we've got to keep that in mind. And it's so difficult. In fact, it's in some cases it's impossible, because you want the kids out of your hair. But training children involves long-term thinking. It involves trying to look down the line and say, okay, I know I want them out of my hair, but what's best for this child 20 years down the line? Is it that there's a relationship between me and that child, therefore we'll go out and play football or whatever we need to do. And that is, it's so easy. I remember we had a dog one time, and I was desperate to get this dog trained to go ahead and look after the cows. But it was too young, far too young. So I introduced it to the cows, absolutely terrified, and remained terrified of cows for the rest of its life. Total dead loss, absolutely useless. So you've got to do things in stages. You've got to do it according to when the child, or a dog for that matter, is ready for it. And it does take an enormous amount of wisdom. Enormous wisdom. Notice over in chapter 6 of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 6. In verse 20. My son, keep your father's commandment. Don't forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them about your neck. When you go, it'll lead you. When you sleep, it'll keep you. When you awake, it'll talk to you. For the commandment is a lamp, the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life. So it's a way of life that you're trying to get a child to go along, that it will stay in for eternity, quite frankly. And it's not to get that child out of our hair, or to get it to behave, to get it sit down, to get it to be a certain way for that specific time. Now that's important, but it's not as important as training that child to eventually let it go, so that when it's that child is away from us, that child will go that way. That's what we're looking for, and that's the goal. Now, within that, if we're going on to the second point, that we as parents and grandparents also need to grow up, over in Matthew chapter 5, in fact, part of child training is not to train just the children, it's to train us. And you look back on your own job that you did as parents, you kind of cringe, you quite frankly. But then this has got to be kept in mind, that part of the training is for us as parents. Now God is a perfect parent, and if you look over in Matthew chapter 5, over in verse 45, it says that you may be the children of your Father, which is in heaven, for he makes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love them which love you, what reward have you? Don't even the publicans do the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what do you more than others? Don't even do the publicans do the same? So our parent is a perfect parent. And it says, you therefore become perfect or mature or ripe like a fruit, ready to be picked, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. So we need to be listening to what God is telling us so that we can therefore be the kind of parents that we need to be. And we grandparents as well, I certainly don't exclude ourselves. Look over in Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3. In Philippians chapter 3 and in verse 12, it says, not as though I'd already attained or were already perfect, same word being used, already mature, already ripe. We're not. All of us are in the process of becoming perfect. It says become perfect. It says be you perfect or become perfect. But I follow after, if that I may apprehend that for which I'm also apprehended of Jesus Christ. Brethren, I don't count myself to have apprehended, but this thing I do, forgetting what's behind, reaching for those things that are before, I press, or I strive towards the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Let us therefore, as many as be mature, perfect. Same thing, it says become perfect or be perfect as your Father is. Be thus minded. And the thus minded is that we are striving towards that. So in our parenting, we must learn ourselves as we overcome things and realize we're going to make some mistakes. We're going to have to go to God in repentance, quite frankly, about the way we parent, because we will make mistakes. But we should not leave it at that. And if anything be otherwise minded, God will reveal even this to you. Nevertheless, whereto we have already attained, let us walk by the same rule. Let us mind the same thing. So we need to make sure that we're all working towards that goal of being perfect, of being the perfect parent as God is the perfect parent. Now, you say, well, humanly it's impossible. Okay, but part of parenting is that we learn as parents. It's not just training our children, it's that God is training us through it. And we need to make sure that we understand that. I'm not the same person I was 15 years ago. I mean, you aren't. I mean, you look back 15 years. What were you like 15 years ago? Yeah. All of us are different. And I'm not the same parent that I was 15 years ago. I would hope that I've improved, become a bit more patient, at least than I used to be. Over in Psalms 37. Psalm 37. This particular psalm, it talks about stability, about this quiet assurance of doing what's right. We need an environment where children can flourish. And okay, this really impinges on our example in many ways. But this is the stability that the children need. Notice it says, don't fret yourself because of evildoers. Neither be envious against the workers of iniquity, for they will soon be cut down like the grass and wither as a green herb. That's Psalm 37. Trust in the Eternal, do good, and you'll dwell in the land, and truly you will be fed. Delight yourself in the Eternal, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your ways to the Eternal. Trust in him also, and he will bring it to pass. And he will bring forth your righteousness as the light and the judgment as the noonday. Rest in the Eternal and wait patiently for him. Don't fret yourself because of him that prospers in his way, because of the man that brings wicked devices to pass. Cease from anger, forsake wrath. Don't fret yourself in any way to do evil, for evildoers shall be cut off. But those that wait upon the Eternal, they will inherit the earth. For a little while, and the wicked will be no more, and you'll diligently consider his place, and it will not be. But the meek, the teachable, will inherit the earth, and will delight themselves in the abundance of peace. Now, if we apply that to our parenting, and we realize that the teachable, the meek, are going to inherit the earth, and we, part of our training is being parents. A large part of our training is ourselves being parents and grandparents. It's not just training our children, it's training us. And we need to understand that the teachable, so that we do become perfect, that we haven't attained it all at once, that if we've made mistakes parenting, as grandparents, we correct those mistakes. If you've made mistakes parenting, as older parents, you correct those mistakes. And it is a continual learning process that we're involved in. I know that on the television a few months ago now, there was an example, I think it was the television, it was. There's an example of two brothers. One was a drug addict, and he was absolutely adamant. The reason why he was a drug addict and a totally useless was that he had such a bad environment, and he blamed everything on his environment. And yet the other brother was a businessman. I don't know if he was a millionaire. I think he was, actually. He was a millionaire. And he had exactly the same environment, and yet you got these two extremes. And it was a different approach to the same thing. He was determined to raise himself out of the gutter. And the mental approach of one contrasted with the mental approach of the other gave two entirely different results. We don't need to become millionaires or whatever, but within our parenting, we do need to understand that we ourselves need to grow up, and we need to change, that we don't have to follow our own parents. If we see errors in our own parenting, and all of us can, there's no perfect parents, we can determine to break the mold. We don't have to go and repeat the same mistakes. If we've seen mistakes in our own grandparenting, we don't have to go ahead and repeat the same mistakes. Turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, right at the end, it says, desire earnestly the best gifts, yet I'm showing you a more excellent way. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, and do not have a way of give in regard to our children, again, apply this now to our parenting and the way in which we train our children and our grandchildren. I'm as a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. So in other words, I can speak all the words I want, but if I don't have the basic approach, if that approach is not right, it's an outgoing approach, trying to encourage that child and trying to train that child for what that child is going to need in the future, I'm wasting my time. If I've got the gift of prophecy, and I understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, I can remove mountains, and I don't have that way of give, and we can apply it specifically in our parenting, I'm nothing. So I can be the world's best whatever, architect, IT technician, whatever we happen to be, if we don't have that way of give in our parenting, because that is one area that we have that we ourselves need to be growing up in, or in our grandparenting, I can be the world's one most wonderful minister or whatever, and yet if I don't get it right as far as the grandparenting is concerned, it's a waste of time. If I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and I give my body to be burned, and I don't have this way of give, it's not profiting me anything. This way of give is long-suffering. It's kind. So as a parent with the mind of God is long-suffering, they're kind, and grandparents as well. This way of give doesn't envy, doesn't look at the, why are my kids like so-and-sos or whatever. It doesn't, its way of give doesn't vaunt itself, it's not puffed up. It doesn't behave in an unseemly way. It doesn't seek its own. It doesn't try and get its kids to shut up and be quiet and all the rest of it at the expense of helping the child and training the child. It's not evilly provoked. And that's something, believe me. It doesn't think any evil. And it's so difficult. Rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. So, I know that somebody told me, I was some of these notes I actually had initially about 10 years ago in Llanelli. And it's just interesting. I asked about what's the perfect parent, and I asked these kids in the YOU, one of which is sitting here. And one of them said to me, it says, somebody who is there when you want them there. You remember that? No? Well, that was actually you. That's your reply. The reply, things come back to haunt you. The reply that I got was, somebody who's there when you want them there. Amber said, somebody who's there when you don't want them there, the way Amber would. But it was interesting reading these now. 10 years on, when here we have the YOU, who are now parents. Okay, let's go into the next section. And that is that sacrifice is required. Now, we do live in a very self-absorbed society. You just look at this last issue that actually occurred, where these two girls were murdered, and people had written on the flowers and said, why? And we actually, we were talking, and the answer to it is all around us. The society as a whole is self-absorbed. It does not want, it does not think for other people. It is entirely self-absorbed. If we turn over to Romans chapter 5, in verse 6, it says, for when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commended his love, his way of give towards us, that when we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, being now justified by his blood, we will be saved from wrath through him. For if when we were enemies we were reconciled to God by the death of his Son, much more, being reconciled, we will be saved by his life. And that life is the same kind of life. It is a sacrificial life. It is always outgoing. As far as our kids are concerned, we should always love our children. But we shouldn't not necessarily always like them. Because, quite frankly, sometimes they can be little horrors. But we should always love them. We should always have their best interest in heart. And for us to really have that, children and grandparents, it's going to take it's going to take more than pure human human love. I remember again as an example that a woman that Judy was working with at one time, she'd dropped the child off in a creche, and I think the child was ill and wanted to make sure, basically drop the child off so that she could come to work, and at work was going through the catalogs trying to get a new car. You know, it was twisted. It was out of her husband was a sergeant in the police force, and I think progressing pretty steadily through the police force, so they weren't without a decent job, but they wanted more. The children so often today are the cherry on top of the lives, instead of the way it used to be years ago, which was the reason for life. The reason for life years ago was that the children would then carry on. That was the way it used to be. Therefore, the children were very important. But unfortunately today, that's not the case. Notice over in 1 John. 1 John chapter 4. Now, I'll read it slightly differently, but I think should apply. I know it's not strictly what it says, but let's just read it this way. In verse 12 of 1 John chapter 4, no man has seen God at any time. If we love one another, if we love our children, let's put our children in there. If we love our children, God dwells in us and his love is being perfected in us. And this is how we know that we dwell in him and he in us, because he's given us of his Spirit. And we have seen and testify that the Father sent his Son to be a rescuer of the world. Whoever shall have the same word, the same approach, that Jesus is the Son of God, God dwells in him and he in God. And we have known and believed the love that God has to us. God is love, and he that dwells in love dwells in God, and God in him. Notice verse 20. If a man say, I love God, and hates his children, he's a liar. For he that loves not his children that he has seen, how is he going to love God that he hasn't seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loves God loves his children also. Now, I know I'm putting children instead of brother, but you know that is true. That is still true. That today we live in a society where it talks about without natural affection. In 2 Timothy it talks about that. If we turn back to Titus chapter 2, Titus. And yet Titus chapter 2, in verse 1 it says, but you speak the things that become sound teaching, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, and sound in faith, in charity, and in patience. And the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becomes holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. So this is something that the elderly, older women in the church need to do, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, and to love their children. Now that does take teaching. It's not necessarily natural for us to love our children all the time. It's not going to be the case. Sacrifice is required. And in today's society, we are going to find that repeatedly. And it goes on to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good and obedient to their husbands, that the word of God is not blasphemed. Now, that is necessary. I mean, listening it's a sacrifice. You know, to stop what we're doing, whether we're a grandparent or a parent or whatever, and to listen to our children, it is a sacrifice. Helping children with homework is a sacrifice, and it's things that we don't naturally do. You're talking about the perfect parent. When I asked that question in the YOU, Robin said, somebody who helps you along and doesn't spend all his time in front of his computer. I can't imagine who he's talking about, but no, it is, it's true. It does take sacrifice. And as I say, the job of parenting is not just to teach children, it's to teach us as parents, so that we ourselves are being trained by God in a parenting situation. Now, the fourth point I want to deal with is that if we do not train our children, Satan will. Now, if we turn over to Proverbs chapter 1, and I think this aspect is something that is going to increase. Now, we don't know when Satan will be actually cast down to the earth, because it does say, woe unto you upon the earth, for Satan has come down to you, the devil's come down to you having great wrath, knowing he's got a short time. We don't know when that's going to be. But I would imagine that the actual job of parenting is going to become that much more difficult. Because what we need to do, and I'll come on to that in a little while, is to teach our children how to handle Satan. That is one of the major jobs. This is what this article that I was trying to look for, which was actually in the end of the, what do you call it, that publication that came out from Modesto. It's the newsletter, is it? Newsletter. There's an article by Mr. Armstrong. Read that. That the major thing that we have to do is to train our children how to handle the attitudes and so on that come from Satan. But in Proverbs chapter 1, we read in verse 8 about my son, hear the instruction of your father. Don't forsake the law of your mother, for there'll be an ornament of grace upon your neck and chains your head and chains about your neck. It then goes on, it says, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us and let us wait for blood, let us lurk privately for the innocent without a cause, swallow them up alive. Now obviously he's talking to older children here, teenagers he's talking to. Then we'll find all precious substance and fill our houses with spoil. Cast your lot and we'll have one purse. Don't walk in their way. Refrain your foot from their paths, for their feet run after evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain is the net spread in the sight of all the birds, and they lay in wait for their own blood, they lurk privately for their own lives. And so are the ways of everyone that's greedy of gain, that takes away the life of the owners thereof. And that last verse really describes the world in which we live. The greed people are greedy of gain and will trample on people to get what they want. And that is there are only two ways of life. You know, it says, I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. These two ways of life. If we turn over to Proverbs chapter 7. There's other areas as well. It's not just a case of the people enticing them in regard to chapter 1, but in chapter 7, verse 1, it says, keep my words and lay my commandments with you, keep my commandments and live, and the law is the apple of your eye, and bind them on your fingers. And it says that they may keep you, in verse 5, from the strange woman, from the stranger that flatters with her words. It says, from the window of my house I looked through my casement, I beheld among the simple ones, I discerned the youths, the young man, void of understanding, passing through the street by a corner, and he went his way into a house. Now that's part of what we are protecting our children from. That's part of what the training that we need to give our children. Now it's so difficult. Now, you've got children that are very young, but it will be in a relatively short space of time that you'll need to deal with this kind of problem. With a much fair speech in verse 21, she called him to yield, and the flattering of her lips she forced him. And he goes after her like an ox goes to the slaughter. And these things need to be discussed, they need to be brought out within the household. If we turn over to Ephesians 2, We need to be aware of this, and we need to make sure that our children also are aware of it. Now, I know that when it talks about the children of disobedience here, it's talking about human beings generally, but nevertheless, Ephesians 2, verse 2, it says, in times past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, and the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. Now that spirit actually works in our children of disobedience as well. Now I know that it's talking spiritually. It's quite clear that that's what it's talking about. But Mr. Armstrong did bring out the fact that the way in which Satan operates is attitudes of mind that come through the air. And our children are going to listen to either one way or another way. Now, who are they listening to? Are they going to listen to us? If we do not get the attention of our children, if we allow the children to go their own way without, you know, without listening, then they will listen to that other spirit. There's absolutely no question of that, and we must be aware of that, that they're either going to listen to us, and hopefully we will be training them God's way, or they will listen to Satan. There's no other way. Those are the only two courses. There's either God's way or it's Satan's way, and we are told to train them and to instruct them in the ways of God. So those two ways of life, they're either going to be listening to us, and we really do need to make sure that we do get their attention. That if we tell them something and they go off and do their own thing, whatever they want to do, then something needs to be done to bring them back. And again, it's a long-term view. It's not just something that we need to do on the spur of the moment to make them behave, make them shut up, make them sit down, make them be quiet. That is short-sighted. We need to try and have a longer term, a longer view of the situation, understanding that we're not going to do it perfectly, that we ourselves are also learning as well. But Satan will get through unquestionably. If you turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, this is something that we didn't used to understand. When I first came in contact with the church, this was not understood. And it's something that Mr. Armstrong came to understand as he went further down through his life. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, it's talking here, let's pick it up in verse 11. But if she depart, let her remain unmarried, or be reconciled to her husband, and don't let her husband put away his wife. So that is to the married, notice verse 10 it says. But to the rest, so he's talking first of all to the unmarried, he says, and then to the married, he says. But in verse 12 it says, to the rest. Now these are people that are married to unconverted mates. It's the only other rest that there could be. I speak not the Lord. If any brother has a wife that does not believe, and she being pleased to dwell with him, don't let him put her away. And the woman that has a husband that believes not, and if he be pleased to dwell with her, don't let her leave him. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified, is set apart, has protection from God, by the wife. And the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else were your children unclean, but now they are holy. They are set apart. Now, just the fact that one of the parents is within the church, the children are holy. They are set apart. They have the ability to actually understand things that most in this world do not understand. If I can read something that Mr. Armstrong wrote, he said, in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 8 to 9, Paul addresses the unmarried and widows. In verse 10 to 11, he addresses the married. In verse 12 to 16, he addresses, quote, the rest, unquote. Who can that be? The context explains, and this is great news. Children of even one converted parent may be taught by that parent to offset Satan's reaching them through the human spirit within them. This also places a responsibility on God's church and on all parents in the church to work with our children from babyhood to adult. It's a wonderful truth, and the YES program is going to definitely help in this regard. But that is in 1979 that was written. There's another one. It says, Jesus said plainly and emphatically, this is in 1979, no man can come to me unless the Father draws him, and no man can except for those specially called for special duty. All humanity has been cut off from God. God has not as yet been trying to get the world saved, but the children of those called are set apart in a separate category. This is big news, not heretofore being taught in God's church. This was 79, these things. It says, notice verse 14 again. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified, put in a special category, not necessarily called, but not cut off, free to come to Christ if he wishes. Else were your children unclean, that is, cut off from God like other children are. But now they are holy. Or in other words, the children of a believing parent are set apart. In the sense, they are not cut off from God as are other children. It does not mean they're converted, just that they are not cut off from God. The believing parent can still then teach them, and when they're mature, hopefully they may be converted. So these are quotes from Mr. Armstrong, and it's quite clear that he read the way, in fact, he read that verse was that our children are in a special category. They can be trained to resist Satan, and that is one of the main things that we need to train them. We need to make sure that we help those kids to resist the pressure on them and the pressure from the spirit of this world. And the spirit of this world, Satan, does not deal with specifics. It's more attitudes. And I know I used to hear Mr. Armstrong talk about the importance to train our children and to make sure that we train them in attitudes and how to handle attitude of mind. And I never really understood it. I just did not understand it. It was a case of the kids have got to get out of our hair. They've got to behave themselves. They've got to do as they're told. And Estelle can vouch for that. But that's not the way to train kids. It's not the way kids should be trained. It's the case that you should help the children to cope with the pressures that they are having. It's a case of getting our mind off ourselves. And if you'd go over to James, go over to James here. In James chapter 4. Now, I know that this is talking about wars and fightings in verse 1. That can be within families. Where do these things come from? How do we have fights within families between kids? They lust, they desire, they have not, they kill and desire to have and they can't obtain, they fight in war because you don't ask. You ask and receive and not because you ask amiss. In other words, the entire approach is wrong. But the answer over in verse 6, it says, but he gives more grace, more unmerited favor, of which he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit yourself, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Now, we need to train our children to deal with Satan and his attitudes. And there is something to be said for actually telling Satan to go. There really is. I mean, if you are dealing with somebody that has a problem, a demon problem or whatever, as a minister, that is the way that you tell them to deal with the problem. You tell Satan to get out. I have nothing, you know, I don't want you, leave me alone. If somebody is dealing with somebody that has a demon problem, you look them square in the eye, you say, you leave me alone. Because you're not talking to the person, you're talking to the demon. And you can go back and you can read like Mark 1:27 or Luke 9:42, where Christ dealt with unclean spirits. And he rebuked them, he spoke directly to them. And we should train our kids to make sure that if they get these kind of attitudes and thoughts or whatever, it is from a spiritual source. And we can train our children to say, leave me alone, go away. And they've got to leave. And let the children know and understand that that attitude, that way, must leave. Because that's where it's coming from. It is actually coming from a satanic source. He is the prince of the power of the air. So this is something that we neglect at our peril, that if we don't train our children, Satan will train them. Now, the next point number five I've got, which is example is vital, it also fits as well, that if our example is not being, if they're not seeing us, if we're away so much, or if we don't have anything to do with our kids, Satan will use examples to train our kids. He will. If we push them off to school and never spend, you know, they spend time after school in gym, in clubs or whatever, and they get home and they just have a bite to eat in front of the television and straight to bed, they never spend any time with the parents, they will be being trained, and the example that they'll be looking at will be examples which are wrong. Now, Hebrews chapter 12. In Hebrews chapter 12, we find in verse 1, it says, therefore, seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, examples, let us lay aside every weight and sin that so easily besets us. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, and is sat down at the right hand of the very throne of God. Now we have an example that we can look to, what I brought out in the Sabbath service sermon, Christ's example on keeping the Sabbath. And we can look at the example that we've been given from Christ. And Christ was, in John 14:9, it says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. It doesn't mean to say they were one and the same. It means that God in the flesh was Christ. When we're looking at example, we'll turn over to Titus. In Titus chapter 2, notice in verse 6, now we just read in the beginning of Titus 2, where we were instructed that the older women teach the younger women. And in then verse 6, it says, young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded or discreet, sound-minded, in all things showing yourself as a pattern. Now he's talking to Titus, who is a minister. Showing yourself a pattern of good works in teaching, showing uncorruptness, gravity, and sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that's of a contrary opinion may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. So we're looking at example. An example is essential. And within childhood, if in fact we as parents have a bad example, that will actually teach more than will any words that we have. And as I say, it's not going to be perfect, but we've got to have the right example. You know, you can't say one thing and be doing another. The light and the salt of the world doesn't stop when we come home. When we come home, when we come through the door, the light and the salt has got to be there. We've got to reflect the way our life has got to reflect God's Spirit. Now, when we're looking at the minds of our children and we're looking at the examples that Satan can use to train them, TV is an absolute killer. We need to be aware of what is on the television. To plonk kids down in front of a television is asking for trouble. I'm not saying that you can't watch it at all. I'm saying that we do need to be careful about what is being watched. The friends that our children have are absolutely vital. I mean, they need to be vetted. Be careful when they go across to friends' houses, because what are they watching? What videos do they watch? It's very difficult. Books being read also. If we do not set the example ourselves, the children will find examples to look at themselves. And Satan has plenty of them. And it's a very, very difficult job to train our children within this society. I was watching a Michael Jackson interview, and Michael Jackson is incredibly effeminate. I mean, he just is. But apparently his father was a tyrant. His father was a real bully. And he just completely different. And that seemed to be the result. So the example, sometimes it can make a child go exactly the same as the example, or to the other extreme, to the degree which is way beyond anything that should be there. The James Bulger murders, the two boys that were arrested came apparently from broken homes, and were actually imprisoned because of it. But the videos that they were watching apparently were violent. They were, chainsaw massacre type stuff. And it's interesting, if you turn over to Proverbs 31, it's not just the father's example. The father's example is absolutely paramount. But in Proverbs 31, the mother's example as well is necessary. Verse 10, who can find a virtuous woman for a price is far above rubies? And over in verse 28, says, her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but you have excelled them all. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that fears the Eternal will be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands. Let her own works praise her in the gates. Let her own works praise her in the gates. So we do need to be sure that as we teach our children, the main area of teaching, which is the example that we set, that it's not a case that what you are speaks so loud they can't hear what you say, because that is very, very easily done. Finally, final point, teaching and discipline. Notice over in Deuteronomy chapter 5, notice what it says in chapter 5, and Moses called all Israel and said to them, listen, O Israel, verse 1, chapter 5, to the statutes and judgments I'm speaking to your ears this day, that you may learn them and keep them and do them. Again, if we cannot get our children to listen to us, we cannot teach them. It is absolutely impossible. So the rule in our house was that if I could speak and they would listen, that's fine. If I could not get any attention, then they'd go over my knee. That was the way we handled it. It wasn't perfect, and I know that. But that is biblically correct. In verse 29, it says, oh, that there was such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it may be well with them and their children forever. And over in chapter 6, verse 1, now these are the commandments and the statutes and judgments the Eternal your God commanded to teach you, that you may go do them do in the land where you're going to possess it, that you may fear the Eternal your God to keep His commandments and statutes, which I command you, you and your son and your son's son, so it's grandparents as well, it's not just parents, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Listen, therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with you, and that you may increase mightily as the Eternal God of your fathers has promised you, in the land that flows with milk and honey. Listen, Israel, the Eternal our God is one Lord, and you will love the Eternal your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your might. And these words that I command you, in other words, that you are listening to this day, will be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children when you sit in your house, walk by the way, lie down, and when you rise up. Now, just the same way as God tells us to listen when He speaks, so we have got to make sure that our children listen when we speak. So when we speak, when we are instructing, we need to make sure that the instruction is for their long-term good. It's looking down through the, you know, till the 20 if necessary. But it's also a case that when we do that, and when we need to have their attention, that we make them listen to us. It's absolutely crucial. If we cannot get our kids to listen to us, we've totally lost the battle. Because Satan will talk, we will lose. And if we notice, turn over to 1 Corinthians 15. 1 Corinthians 15. At the end of 1 Corinthians 15, it says, verse 58, it says, therefore, my beloved brethren, be you steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know, your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now, that sounds so religious and so sanctimonious and all the rest of it. But apply that into parenting and child training. You know, be steadfast, unmovable in the way we teach, the way we discipline, always abounding in the work of the Lord. In other words, having the same kind of mindset. For as much as you know that this labor, this work that we're engaged in, is not in vain. It's realistically, it is necessary. You will, eventually, our children are going to be in the very family of God. That's what we're looking for. We need to set fair rules within the household. We need to discuss them. You know, husband and wife need to discuss the rules. They need to be adapted, clear, biblically based rules. They don't have to be all supercilious or whatever. I've got a quote here that from the autobiography. And he was talking about some accusations that were coming. And Mr. Armstrong refers back to these accusations and things that he had to put up with in the early years of the church. But he said, they plan to discredit you, exclaimed Mr. Helms, by charging that your wife is not a neat housekeeper. Then turning to the biblical qualifications for an elder, for ruling well his own household. And since they'll claim that you're not ruling your wife sternly enough to be a better housekeeper, they'll claim that you are not scripturally fit to be a minister and must be put out of the ministry. And that was the kind of tactic. This came as a shocking surprise. Their accusation was false. My wife was a good housekeeper, and I did rule my own family and household, and did have my children in subjection. But these men knew that most members didn't know all about a private family life and would believe their lie. I accepted the offer. It says, you may be sure I prayed a great deal over it. Actually, Mrs. Armstrong had always been a very clean housekeeper, and a very neat one, with the exception that during the years when we had four growing children in the house, and at this time the youngest was 3 and the eldest was 15, children did leave a few things misplaced on occasion, of course. But the charge Mr. Oberg planned to make was simply an outrageous lie. I mean, kids, you're never going to have a completely perfect house. You're going to have toys around the place. And Sam Oberg, Mr. Armstrong was explaining, made a fetish of stern neatness, punctuality, certain outward mannerisms designed to lead others to think him righteous. Actually, although he was unreasonably stern with his little 3-year-old daughter, he knew about as little of proper child rearing as anyone I ever knew. He went to the extreme on stern demands for certain mannerisms of decorum, and punished his child with over-severity, while at the same time he completely neglected her in most other ways, failed to properly teach and train her, and allowed her to do other things that should not have been done. Now that is the problem. And it's easy to do that. If we're not careful, we can, in fact, on training and discipline, it's outward mannerisms, it's outward appearances, because then our children will look good to the outside world. We've got to be careful of that. Not to say that they shouldn't be neat, they shouldn't be tidy, they shouldn't be trained to put away their things. But why are we doing that? We're doing it for their benefit, so that their desk doesn't look like mine. It does sometimes when it finally disintegrates. You know, they know how to have a place for everything, so that they don't necessarily struggle the way we do. So it is trying to encourage the children and trying to guide them and direct them, so that in the future their life might be that much better. Notice over in Hebrews chapter 12, just a couple of scriptures now. Hebrews chapter 12. We'd read about Christ being an example to us in verse 2. But verse 3, it says, "For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. You haven't yet resisted to blood, striving against sin. And have you forgotten the exhortation that speaks to you as to children? My son, don't despise the chastening of our Lord, nor faint when you're rebuked of him. For who the Lord loves, he chastens, he spanks." He chastens, he corrects, and he scourges or spanks every son that he receives. If you endure chastening, God is dealing with you as sons. For what son is there that a father doesn't discipline? But if you be without discipline, of which all are partakers, then you're bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we've had fathers of our flesh, which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much more rather be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they truly for a few days corrected us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit. So if we're going to do it the way God did it, we correct for the profit, for the value, for the children, that we might be partakers of his holiness, so that they may grow up with the right character and approach in the life. Now, no chastening, no correction for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. So it's obviously talking about spanking. Nevertheless, afterwards it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness to those that are exercised thereby. Therefore lift up the hands that hang down and the feeble knees. Make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way or dislocated, but let it rather be healed. So we live in a corrupt society, and a society that doesn't spank children, but a society that does abuse them. Neither is right. And, you know, the abuse of children is absolutely downright wrong. Physical abuse as well, you know, hitting them around the head and that kind of thing, absolutely wrong. But not spanking is also wrong. It is clearly biblical, and that is the case. And if we look at the way in which God spanks, Leviticus chapter 26, we can start to understand. Remember I said that the reason why I had this rule in our house, that if I could teach them, if I could talk to the children, I would talk. But if I couldn't talk and they would listen, then I would spank. Leviticus 26, verse 18. And if you will not yet, for all this, listen to me, then I will punish you 7 times more for your sins. He was wanting them to listen. And if they didn't listen, then he punished. That's the way God did it. Well, in verse 21, it says, and if you walk contrary to me and will not listen to me, I'll bring 7 times more plagues upon you according to your sins. In other words, it'll increase and the punishment will increase. Verse 27, and if you will not for all this listen to me but walk contrary to me, I will walk contrary to you and in fury, and I will even chasten you 7 times more for your sins. But what it is listening. It is not a case of stern discipline. It's not a case of trying to get them to shut up, sit down, and all the rest of it. And that's, if anything, that's probably where I went wrong. It was a case of having the children behave the way I wanted them to behave because it reflected on me. And that is a problem with us as parents. But you know, the attitude of mind, if a child is listening, if a child is trying but failing, is struggling, then there isn't a need for spanking. I mean, there just isn't. Why spank? There's a need perhaps for correction, but you know, we've got to be a loving parent. We've got to try and help and assist our child, our children, to cope with life, to be able to fight through this spiritual soup that we're in, that is satanic, to handle that, encourage it how to, you know, if it goes, you know, if something goes wrong and stomps off in a huff, that child needs help to be able to handle that stomping off, because that's not the way that we should be behaving. And it's not a case of correcting the child for stomping off. It's assisting that child to handle the problem that he or she is facing. Now, if the child will not listen to us, then's the time to correct and spank. But if the child is listening to us, then it's a case of encouraging it and helping that child to overcome the problem that it has. And it's an attitude problem. If you have a child that is devious and sly, then it's necessary to, you know, watch for that attitude. And our experience is that my experience is that it tends to be the ones that come along afterwards, not the first one normally, but the second one or third one, that will tend to be more devious. Because the first one, the second one that tends to look at what's happening and then work out that, hang on a minute, if I'm just a little bit canny, I can get the first one to get all the rap. And I will be able to escape it. If we turn over to Isaiah, final scripture, Isaiah 54. Isaiah 54. We notice in verse 10, it says, for the mountains shall depart and the hills shall be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from you, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, says the Eternal that shall have mercy on you. Now remember, we just read how God specifically said that he would spank, and he would spank 7 times more for the sins if they didn't listen. But he says the kindness will never depart from you. The covenant of my peace will never be removed. He'll have mercy on you. O you afflicted, tossed with tempest, not comforted, behold, I will lay your stones with fair colors. I will lay your foundation with sapphires. I'll make your windows of agates and your gates of carbuncles and all your borders of pleasant stones. And all your children shall be taught of the Eternal, and great shall be the peace of your children. Great shall be the peace of the children. And that's really what we're looking for. We're looking for God being in us as parents, learning to be more like God ourselves, learning to handle things the way God does ourselves, teaching our children in the same way, so that our children, it will be great, will be the peace of our children, because they're being held and helped in the right way. We're not going to do it perfectly, and we're going to make our mistakes, but those are the at some pointers anyway, in a continuing process, in really parental instruction and parental character.